Thanks for downloading our podcast. You can find out more about Tech Tent from our webpage. Go to bbcworldservice.com/techtent. Hello and welcome to Tech Tent, your weekly update on all the hottest news and trends in the technology business. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones, and this week we have exclusive access to an international police operation to close call centres in India involved in what's known as computer software service fraud. We also have a much more positive story from India. We'll hear about their pioneering use of robots in surgery. And we'll ask whether Facebook's cryptocurrency Libra is in better or worse shape following Mark Zuckerberg's appearance in front of a congressional committee. Joining me this week is Su Ping Chang, BBC economics reporter and a big expert on the cryptocurrency scene. Hi, Su.
Hello, Rory.
Had a busy week?
Yes, I had the pleasure of watching that five-hour testimony by Mark Zuckerberg.
Excellent. And our special guest, who I think also was watching that, is Isabella Kaminska from the Financial Times Alphabill blog. Also hugely expert on the crypto scene. How are you, Isabella?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Here's a flavour of what's coming up.
In recent weeks, many of these founding members have dropped out of the association. Perhaps they're not so sure it's going to work.
India is a big country, so the idea is to create an averagely good surgeon in every city, in every state. And this is where the robot will probably help us to do an averagely safe surgery.
All of that coming up. Now, it's a common experience. The phone rings and someone who often claims they're from Microsoft tells you there's something wrong with your computer and they can help fix it. Now, this is almost certainly a scam known as computer software service fraud and could end up with you losing large sums of money. For 4 years, an international operation involving British and Indian police and Microsoft has been targeting the criminals behind this fraud. We've had exclusive access to the operation, which recently succeeded in closing two Indian call centres. Late night in Calcutta, and the shutters are coming down at the offices of a company which the police say is involved in a fraud affecting thousands of victims in the US and UK. The Calcutta Police Cyber Squad have just raided and shut down what they describe as two criminal call centres. Seven men have been arrested, a number of computers and hard drives have been seized. The raids come as part of a four-year investigation by Indian and UK police and the software giant Microsoft into what's a common crime, computer software service fraud.
This is a debit advice from Royal Bank of Scotland confirming that I've sent £4,000 to these people in India. This man helped me to, on my computer here, to go into my bank account and transfer this money to this branch in India.
Doug Vary, a retired businessman living in the southwest of England, is one of the victims of this crime. It started when he bought some security software.
I think, from memory, a pop-up would have appeared on my computer here, and it offered antivirus software for £556 for a period of 12 years. And I thought, per year, that's quite cheap. And so I was okay, and I agreed to sign up for it, and I paid with my Visa credit card.
A few months later, his new security advisors rang.
I was sitting in the evening, it was dark, and the phone went, and I answered it, and it was Vision Web Creations, the people that we'd taken this software out with. And they said, "Mr. Vary, we've just discovered a serious problem on your computer. Don't put the phone down, but can you walk to your computer?" So I walked from the other room here and looked at this screen where there's a picture of a thick-set man in his 50s, I guess, on a computer doing things. And this chap said, oh my God, this is worse than I thought. And he was increasing my level of anxiety to the point where I was panicking. And he said, "Look what he's doing. Oh my God, he's buying, look, he's buying guns, weapons, grenades, bullets." And I'm thinking, phew, he's pretending to be me, and I'm going to be in serious trouble with the police if I'm caught doing this.
The man on the phone had a solution to this terrifying situation.
And then he said, right, we can really help you sort this out, and we can offer you a package of increased security and remove this problem off your computer so you'll never have this risk again. And he then said, hold on a minute, I'll see what special offer we can do. And he came back with a figure of £4,000. Now, at that time, it wouldn't have mattered what he'd have said. I wanted to finish with the problem.
It was only weeks later that Doug realised this was a scam. The company that had called him was one of those raided by the Kolkata police. That won't, however, put an end to this very widespread fraud. Jim Downing is a British IT professional and in his spare time investigates these scam calls. He's observed the techniques employed.
They will say, we're from your internet service provider, or we're somebody like Visa or MasterCard, and we've seen some suspicious activity on your card. But this is all a guise to get you to log into your computer. They will ask for remote access to that computer, and ultimately they will get you to log into your bank account so that they can ultimately send money out of that bank account to theirs. I have a YouTube channel which kind of specializes in tracking some of these scammers. Over the past 6 months, I've had unprecedented access to a scam call center. And I deliberately have set up a little thing on my computer which allows them to log in, and it looks like a real computer, but it's not a real computer. I have it set up in a way that it deliberately traces their connection, and ultimately I can even reverse that connection. So they will attempt to scam me, but in the background I will connect to their computer. There was a group who were running what's called a refund scam. So they were pretending to be a computer company that had closed down, and they were offering people a refund. And what I was able to do was to deliberately allow them connection to my computer. And I reversed that connection, and I could see exactly what the scammers were seeing. So they had a laptop, and they actually lifted this laptop up off their desk, and it had a webcam on it. And I was able to see right around the call center and both see and hear through their microphone exactly what was going on.
Commander Karen Baxter of the City of London Police says the international operation against the scammers sends out a message.
It's a real success that we've managed to get these raids. They're not the first raids. We've had a number of operations running, so we've built on the intelligence at each point. We now have that success in this stage of the investigation. And what it says to criminals is that we will pursue you no matter where you are in the world. We will work with other law enforcement, we will work with the private sector, and we will do what we need to do to bring you to justice.
As for Doug Vary, he hopes others will learn from his experience.
I was an absolute plonker to get involved, but these people are so believable. I can't believe how stupid I was, but it was this degree of fear that they generated, and I was just going to do what they told me to get out of this problem.
Doug Vary, victim of that very scary fraud and common fraud. Special guest Isabella Kaminska from the Financial Times. Have you had those kind of calls?
I have, actually. When I was based in Geneva, I would get them, and they're very aggressive, and they insist that they are reputable representatives of the companies in question, and it's very hard to get them off the phone, but you can play with them a bit.
Yes, I've kept them on the phone and recorded some of the calls, and jousted with them a little. Suping Chang, BBC economics reporter, what about you?
No, I feel like left out slightly. I mean, I don't have a home phone. I screen all my calls. I tend to text people rather than speak to them. But it sounds like these scams are getting more and more sophisticated. It reminds me of the TalkTalk, similar scam from an Indian call centre a couple of years ago, where they're really preying on people's fears.
Yeah, and elderly, vulnerable people often at risk here. It's a frightening scam. You're listening to Tech 10 on the BBC World Service with Rory Catlin-Jones. In a moment, the Indian surgeon pioneering the use of robots. Now, this week saw Mark Zuckerberg face a six-hour grilling by the Financial Services Committee of the US House of Representatives. While the committee ranged far and wide in its questioning, covering everything from fake news to political bias, the focus was on Facebook's controversial cryptocurrency project, Libra. And it was clear that Mr. Zuckerberg's inquisitors were pretty sceptical. Here's his exchange with Congresswoman Ann Wagner of Missouri.
28 companies joined as founding members by signing a non-binding letter of intent to join the association. But in recent weeks, many of these founding members have dropped out of the association. Perhaps they're not so sure it's going to work either. PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, Booking Holdings, eBay, and Mercado Pago, you've lost these stable partners, I would say, and I find it highly concerning. Very briefly, what do you make of these sudden departures?
And this project is too big for any one company to do on its own, which is why we set up this independent Libra Association with a number of other companies and nonprofits. It's a very complex project, and as you say, it's risky.
Mark Zuckerberg admitting that it's risky. Congressman Barry Loudermilk from Georgia was concerned about risks to the wider financial system.
The Federal Reserve Chairman told our committees earlier this year that if Libra causes problems related to money laundering, terrorism, financing, privacy, or consumer protection, they would rise to systemically important levels simply due to the size of the Facebook network. Now, David Marcus has said if Libra is not done right, it could present systemic risk. Do you believe Libra is systemically important, especially since you're calling it a payment system, which is really done by central banks? Do you compare what you're doing with Libra to central banks, and should you be regulated as such?
Congressman, the distinction on what is systemically important, my understanding is that a big part of that is scale. And I think it's worth noting that just because Facebook serves a lot of people around the world doesn't mean that if we rolled out a product that on day one, all of those people would be using it.
So he's saying it's not going to be that popular, surely. Mr. Zuckerberg went on to commit to meet the relevant requirements if regulators deemed Libra to be systemically important. So let's unpack all this with Isabella Kaminska from the Financial Times and the BBC's own Suping Chang. Isabella, you've been a sceptic, I think it's fair to say. You've written a lot about this project, not much of it complimentary. Did you learn anything from the hearing to make you change your mind?
Actually, I mean, when I'm a skeptic, but I'm also my main line is that I don't think it's actually as innovative as people say it is. I think a lot of it is just structurally interesting, sort of a new version of a central bank structure, essentially. But
Even a cryptocurrency?
We don't think it is. I mean, we've had a big, you know, debate about it. Facebook believes it is. We say it isn't. But fundamentally, I think the hearings made me feel a bit sorry for Mark Zuckerberg, which I don't want to say because I don't want to be like defending him at all. But in the case of, like, for example, with the dropouts, they've dropped out because many of the companies in questions received a very clear-cut letter from regulators saying that if they're involved, they can they will be under additional scrutiny from regulators in their conventional business practices. Now, obviously, that's going to scare them away. It's not necessarily the case that they don't believe in it. It's just, you know, who wants to be put under further regulatory scrutiny?
So we also learned this week that those Libra partners that are still there, the whole idea was they were going to pay $10 million to be part of this club. And that would sort of cement the fact that it wasn't just Facebook dominated it. It was a coalition. And now it turns out they've not actually paid any money.
Yeah. So, yeah, initially, as you say, they needed to pay to play, these 28 original members. But as Tech Tent regular Dave Lee reported earlier this week, the fee was no money has been put on the table, and the fees weren't even discussed at the inaugural meeting of the Libra Association. So it's important to point out that no one expressed a reluctance to pay. But I think what they need to do is first figure out the strategy, what they're going to do with the money before they actually ask people to put the money on the table.
Yeah, I met somebody from a payments company, big payments company, right the day after this was launched, who basically intimated that they were dipping their toe in the water to keep an eye on it, but they weren't necessarily that committed. Is that your impression?
Yeah, I mean, even Visa, when they said, look, we're pulling back from it now, in their official statement, they said, look, we are interested in it, but we are concerned about what some of the regulators are saying. So we're going to observe from the sidelines. We're going to sit and look at what's going on before we assess whether we want to be part of this perhaps in the future. I know, Isabella, you said that, you know, regulatory concerns, that might be too big a hurdle, but a lot of big companies are interested in this, but it's whether they can get it off the ground.
Isabella, isn't the big problem the word Facebook? the Facebook comes into this with not a great reputation.
And funnily enough, I think Mark Zuckerberg was quite, sorry, I can't even say his name now. He was quite upfront about that. I mean, he said in the testimony that maybe he's not the best person to be fronting it. He appreciates it. But this is such a big project. It's so important. It has to be done by somebody. So I don't know what that means.
Let's wrap up our discussion with a quick prediction. It's supposed to launch sometime in 2020. Isabella, is it going to?
No, I think the regulatory hurdles are going to be substantial, and they're going to not just apply in the US. There'll be respective sort of regulatory conversations in all the jurisdictions that they want to target.
And Sue, what do you think?
I agree. Initially, they had planned to launch it in the first quarter of 2020. It keeps getting pushed further and further along the line. And even Facebook has said regulatory concerns are going to cause delays, possibly.
And meanwhile, the price of Bitcoin, I couldn't help noticing, slumped during or following that hearing. It's having a depressing effect on the whole cryptocurrency scene. Moving on, according to the International Federation of Robotics, India is one of the fastest adopters of robots. Plenty of them are finding a home in Indian factories, but they're also being used for medical purposes and, in particular, giving more people access to surgery. Our reporter Jane Wakefield spoke to Dr. Shailesh Puntambekar from the Galaxy Care Laparoscopy Institute in the city of Pune. He described the machine he uses, called Versius.
The Versius robot is a four-arm robot. So one of the arm holds the camera, then there are three more arms which are like the human arms, and they can be brought in from the various positions. They can be brought in from the right side of the patient, the left side of the patient. So this gives us the versatility of putting the arms in whichever directions the surgeon is comfortable and whichever directions the surgery takes place. So these arms are very small arms. They are like the human hands. So it has got a big arm, then a forearm, and then at the forearm there is a wrist. So as much as the wrist moves of the surgeon, the Versius arm also moves with the wrist. The surgeon sits on the console, wears a camera, sees a 3D image, and it is 40 times magnified image of the organ that you need to take out. And the third arm which is there can hold the organ so that you can do the operation with a very steady image of the camera, with a very steady image of the organ. And these two arms with the wrist can bring about whatever kind of movement that you would like to do and do precision cutting. When I say precision cutting, that means I can precisely cut 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter tissues, and as a result of which, because of magnification, because of precision, the surgery becomes safe, becomes duplicable, which is what every surgeon wants, which is what every patient wants.
So can you just explain to us, you know, what the benefits of this are over traditional surgical methods?
There are two benefits. The surgeon benefit is that instead of traditionally standing near the patient, you can operate by sitting comfortably on the chair. Number two, if at all, as the age advances of the surgeon, if there are some tremors which are associated with the hands, these tremors don't get transmitted to the patient. So life of a surgeon in terms of competency increases. As far as the patient is concerned, not every surgeon has the same kind of skills which everybody expects. It's like a game of cricket. Everybody expects to be a great cricketer, but then you can't, even after a great training, you can't reach to the level of the best of the surgeons. So there's a gap which is left in between having the skills and not having one. And this robotic instrument helps you to do and fill up the gap that the surgeon doesn't have. Every possible surgeon, even an average surgeon, can do a reasonably good, safe and precise surgery. So for the patient, he doesn't know how the surgeon is, what are his skills.
Obviously, robotic surgery has been around for a long time now. What is it? Where does India sort of stand in this? I mean, how many robot surgeons do you have in India, and why is this sort of a pioneering piece of kit for you there?
I was the first guy to use the Da Vinci robot, which was there, which is the first robot which came, clinical robot which came in the world. I started using it 2009 and I used it till 2014. So the robotic surgery has been in the world from 1999, and in 2001 an FDA approval was given. So it's been 18 years that robotic surgery is existing in the world. And I have done more than 500 surgeries robotically. The next question was, why did I stop the robotic surgery? Because the robotic surgery, though is an excellent surgery, had a lot of cost issues which were associated. So compared to the cost-benefit ratio, it didn't work out very well for the patient. The robotic surgery having in India, see, we have around 27,000 surgeons in India, out of which around 2,500 to 3,000 surgeons perform laparoscopic surgery very well. So minimal access surgery is done very well by about 2,000 to 2,500 surgeons. And out of this, only 80% of these 2,500 surgeons do very, very basic surgeries like gallbladder and hernia surgeries. It is not that they don't want to do the advanced surgeries. It is that they do not have the skills to do the advanced surgeries. And therefore, the robotic surgery will help to these surgeons to do more and more advanced cases. India is a big country. So the idea is to create an averagely good surgeon in every city, in every state, and this is where the robot will probably help us to do an averagely safe surgery, helping many patients. And I feel that if the cost goes down, I'm very sure that every surgeon will embrace this technology.
Dr. Shailesh Puttambaker speaking to Jane Wakefield. Before we go, let's get an opinion from our two experts on robots taking jobs. They're not taking jobs there, they're help advancing jobs. Isabella Kaminska, are they chewing up jobs at the rate predicted?
I think it's going to be very hard for them to replace humans, because humans are made of fundamentally extremely cheap resources. We're made of carbon and water, and we're very cheap to replicate.
We're cheap. Suping Chang, what's your view?
I'm also optimistic. I think that humans won't be left on the scrap heap in the future.
And this programme is going to continue to employ humans, I can confidently predict. That's all for this week. Thanks to our special guest, Isabella Kaminska from the Financial Times. Thanks to my BBC colleague, Suping Chang. You can get all the latest technology news, including an extended report on that Indian call centre scam, at bbc.com/technology. By the way, if you like the show, give us a rating on your favourite podcast app. And don't forget to join us again in the Tech Tent at the same time next week.